Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, Mike Holt here from Restore Australia. How many of you really understand what Restore Australia stands for? Are we just another activist group seeking to change the Constitution? Some have accused us of being communists because they skimmed our draft Constitution and didn't understand it. But the truth is, our campaign goes much deeper than just seeking constitutional change. What fuels us more than anything else is love. Love of our country and all its beauty and wealth. Love of the Australian people. We are a diverse nation, but we're all united as one, as Australians, and we wouldn't want to have it any other way. Love of freedom. Freedom of speech. Freedom of choice. Freedom of religion. Freedom to make our own decisions. Ours is an idea whose time has come. We're not alone. Groups like Occupy and Anonymous, groups like those who started and participated in the Arab Spring, groups like Julian Assange and his band of truth seekers, are all focused on the same goal. We want to bring about a better world and a better future. One in which each and every one of us has the power to decide on the type of government we the people want. One where we need not fear our government. In fact, our government should fear us. Not out of hatred, but because we will hold them to account for their actions. Isn't it time all Australians took the first step towards this beautiful goal? I admit I'm not perfect, and I have made some mistakes along the way. Some have misunderstood our motives. So read this and understand why I'm doing what I do. It is because I love you all, and I hope that you all feel the same way I do. Because if we don't love ourselves and our nation, we cannot possibly create a better future for our children. Happy New Year. Let's make 2013 the year of change. Real change.
And good morning, everybody in Australia. Welcome to Restore Australia with your host, Mike Holt. As you can tell, I'm not Mike Holt. He will be here momentarily. I'm just holding down the fort until he gets here, but that gives me a chance to introduce myself to you. My name is Cal Fritzy, and I am Mike Holt's producer. I also have my own radio program right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am the Red Fox, and I'm that Red Fox in the Muslim chicken coop. I'm also the infidel that your imam warned you about. My show is heard here Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And what time would that be in Australia? Let me see, 5 a.m. And it's heard Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And that would be 9 a.m. where you folks are. I started my radio program a few years back because I felt I had something to say about the scourge called Islam. There's a lot of things out there. We have to make people aware of this threat that faces us. I decided that I was going to take my voice to the airwaves, and I do not hold back on the Red Fox blogger, not by a long shot. I have had it up to here. I'm furious with this scourge. I didn't really know anything about Islam. Like most of us, I believed 9/11 was a real wake-up call for many people, myself included. I woke up that morning, and I had my radio on. I was making my tea, and they kept talking about this plane hitting a building, so I turned on the TV, and I saw the devastation unfold before my eyes. I was as confused as anybody else. Then I started reading more about what this was, and I became more horrified, and then I became much more angry. I do not want to leave this planet. in the hands of the Islamists. This is not what our forefathers fought for. This is not the legacy we want to leave for our children and grandchildren. I am very pleased that Mike Holt has decided to start his own radio program addressing the issues in Australia. I address the issues in Canada and the United States and globally. I am also a producer on the East Anglian EDL radio show, heard right here on Blog Talk Radio, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. There are a lot of voices out there, a lot of strong voices speaking out against Islam. I'm one of many. Mike is the latest. Jeff Mitchell of the East Anglian EDL radio program has been nipping at their heels for a very long time as well. I'm very proud of these programs, and I'm very proud to produce for both Mike and Jeff. I'm very proud to introduce you to my own radio program, The Red Fox Blogger. Things have got to change out there, and things have got to change fast, because if we don't start changing things now, it will be too late. I'm going to give you just a little bit of a taste of what my intro sounds like, just to give you a better feel of who I am. And here we are.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression, permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory, today and for future generations. Join Kel, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern, and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern, on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And I hope that gives you a bit of an idea of who the Red Fox Blogger is. That, of course, is the opening for my program. There is a reason why these shows are conducted. I've explained a little bit at the beginning, but a lot of people are just tuning in to programs like these on Blog Talk Radio. We give you the news that you're not going to get in the mainstream media nor on terrestrial radio. We are citizen journalists. We do this because we love our countries and we love our heritage and we love our democracies and we love our republics. We don't mess around right here. Not around your dinner table, not around your kitchen table, not around your lunch table, not around anything. You sit down and you listen, and we're not going to mess with you. We promise that we deliver nothing but the very best and nothing but the truth. Islam, the gloves are off, and you know it. See, the beauty about the Internet is we're giving the Islamists lesser places to hide. The beauty of the Internet and Internet radio is that we are not beholden to any CRTC or FCC, anything like that. This is private radio, and we can speak our minds. And if we get angry, we can bang our desk, and we can engage in the old expletives, although I don't do that on my show. I'm going to tell you, though, why is Islam different and dangerous? I just want you to imagine that every day of your life, it begins with a morning call to prayer from minarets around the city or village in which you live. Imagine that you are required to pray 5 times throughout the day, every day. Imagine that you are required to pray 5 times a day, throughout the day, every day. I just wanted to reiterate that, and I'm just repeating myself. Imagine that the law of the land is based on Sharia, taken from the Quran. Imagine that you live in a nation where stoning women, beheading criminals, and other draconian ancient punishments are deemed acceptable. Imagine being Muslim and knowing that conversion from Islam is punishable by death. Imagine saying or doing anything that might be interpreted as disrespect for Muhammad, the false prophet of Islam. That can get you whipped or killed. Imagine a religion or a political entity that has no tolerance for any other religions, even those that existed for 2,000 or 3,000 years prior to Islam. Imagine a religion that sanctifies suicide if it is done for the purpose of killing others. Imagine a religion that has routinely taken over the temples and churches of other faiths and builds mosques in their place, or a religion that builds its mosques upon the most holy sites of other religions. Imagine a culture that reduces women to chattel owned by their fathers and their husbands. Imagine a culture that permits the killing of women for dishonoring the family. Imagine a religion in which a close associate of Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zahari, said, "We have not reached parity with them. We have the right to kill 4 million Americans, 2 million of them children, to exile as many and wound and cripple hundreds and thousands." And this is not restricted to the United States, ladies and gentlemen. No, we see the killing globally. Furthermore, it is our right to fight them with chemical and biological weapons so as to afflict them with fatal maladies that have afflicted the Muslims because of the Americans or Western chemical and biological weapons. Imagine a religion that, on Iranian television, on June 25th of 2004, says, "May Allah, by virtue of the hidden imam, remove the evil West and Israel from humanity." A recent news report says Al-Qaeda is on the verge of producing radioactive weapons after sourcing nuclear materials and recruiting rogue scientists to build dirty bombs. These are according to leaked diplomatic documents. In his book, In the Words of Our Enemies, Jeb Babin wrote, "Like the Nazis, the radical Islamists play on the same sense of persecution and cultural inferiority that many people in underdeveloped nations possess because they are oppressed. And like the Nazis, the Islamists have convinced their followers that the problem of their world are the fault of others. The Islamists blame every ill on their world, on America, the West, the Jews, and Israel. The Middle East and Northern African nations in which Islam dominates are in a state of turmoil, seeking to overthrow the despots that have ruled for decades, no matter who is selected to replace them. Islam remains the guiding principle in the lives of other people. Imagine a religion that divides the world into Dar al-Islam, the land of Islam, and Dar al-Harb, the land of war, which is us, by the way. We are the Dar al-Harb. They cannot be accommodated. They negotiate only with the end goal of achieving domination, and we know that as the caliphate. They cannot be deterred except through the use of force. The translation of the word Islam is submission. We share the planet with 1.6 billion Muslims, and we must either convert them or defeat them. And that is submissive of why you do not want Islam in the West. One of many reasons. There are things that we have to be very much apprised of. I do not know if you're familiar with the four stages of Islamic conquest. Quite frankly, in the West, I'm not too sure where we are. I think that we might be fast approaching stage three. I will give you a brief overview, though, of what these four stages are. The stage one is the infiltration. These are when Muslims begin moving into non-Muslim countries in increasing numbers, and the beginning of cultural conflicts are visible, though they're often subtle. Pardon me. First, the migration wave to non-Muslim host countries. Then they appeal for humanitarian tolerance from the host society. Attempts to portray Islam as a peaceful and a Muslim as a victim of misunderstanding and racism, even though Islam is not a race. High Muslim birth rate in host countries increase Muslim populations. Mosques are used to spread Islam and dislike of host country and culture. Calls to criminalize Islamophobia is hate crime. Threatened legal action for perceived discrimination. Offers of interfaith dialogue to indoctrinate non-Muslims. That is stage one. What about stage two? That would be the consolidation of power. This is when Muslim immigrants and host country converts continue demands for accommodation in employment, education, social services, financing and courts, and of course we are well into stage two all over the West. Proselytizing increases, establishment and recruitment of jihad cells, efforts to convert alienated segments of the population to Islam, revisionist efforts to Islamize history, efforts to destroy historic evidence that reveal true Islamism, increased anti-Western propaganda, and psychological warfare. Efforts to recruit allies who share similar goals, like communists and anarchists. Attempts to indoctrinate children to Islamic viewpoints. Increased efforts to intimidate, silence, and eliminate non-Muslims. Efforts to introduce blasphemy and hate laws in order to silence critics. Continued focus on enlarging Islamic populations by increasing Muslim birth and immigration. Use of charities to recruit, support, and fund jihad. You know where I'm going with this. What about stage three? This is open violence to impose Sharia law and associated cultural restrictions. Rejection of host government, subjugation of other religions and customs. Intentional efforts to undermine the host government and culture. Acts of barbarity to intimidate citizens and foster fear and submission. Open and covert efforts to cause the economic collapse of the society. All opposition is challenged and either eradicated or silenced. Mass execution of non-Muslims, and we are seeing that in Africa. Widespread ethnic cleansing by Islamic militias. Once again, in Africa. Rejection and defiance of host society, secular laws, or culture. Murder of moderate Muslim intellectuals who don't support Islamization. Destruction of churches, synagogues, and other non-Muslim institutions. Women are restricted further in accordance with Sharia law. Large-scale destruction of population, assassinations, and bombings. Toppling of government and usurpation of political power, imposition of Sharia law, That is stage three, ladies and gentlemen. Now what about stage four? Totalitarian Islamic theocracy. Islam becomes the only religious, political, judicial, cultural ideology. Sharia becomes the law of the land. All non-Islamic human rights are canceled. Enslavement and genocide of non-Muslim populations. Freedom of speech and the press is eradicated. All religions other than Islam are forbidden and destroyed. Destruction of evidence of non-Muslim culture, populations and symbols in country, Buddhists, houses of worship, art, etc. That is stage four. The House of Islam, meaning peace, is Dar al-Islam, including those nations that have submitted to Islamic rule, to the soul-crushing, liberty-condemning, discriminatory law of Sharia. The rest of the world is in the house of war, Dal al-Harb, because it does not submit to Sharia and exists in a state of rebellion or war with the will of Allah. No non-Muslim state or its citizens are innocent and remain viable targets of war for not believing in Allah. The Christian, Jewish, Coptic, Hindu, and Zoroastrian people of the world have suffered under subjugation for centuries. The Dhimmis are forbidden to construct houses of worship or repair existing ones, economically crippled by the heavy jizya tax, socially humiliated, legally discriminated against, criminally targeted, and generally kept at a permanent state of weakness, fear, and vulnerability by Islamic governments. That is stage four. We're at stage two. Very much so. We are witnessing the stage two developments in the West. We just had David Cameron of the UK allow Sharia trade. That is stage two. Sharia banking. That frightens me. I mentioned about what's going on in Africa. It should be noted that forced conversions like in Egypt and slavery as in the Sudan are still reported. Homosexuals have been hung from the public square in Iran. And that's a spelling error. It should be hanged because human beings are... I hung my laundry this morning, but an apostate was hanged in the public square in Iran. Young girls are married to old men. Apostates are threatened with death. Honor killings are routine. Women are legally second-class citizens, though Muslim males insist that they are better treated than in the West. These more obvious manifestations may distract from some less obvious ones, such as the lack of intellectual inquiry into science, narrow scope of writing, all but non-existent art and music, sexual use and abuse of youth and women, and the disregard for personal fulfillment, joy, and wonder. Look into the eyes of a recently married 12-year-old girl to see the consequences of the moral deprivation spawned by Islam. That's the four stages of Islamic conquest. We are at stage two. We have seen what happens in other countries. We have seen it for decades. Lebanon, we saw what happened in Lebanon. We saw what happened in Afghanistan. We are witnessing what is going on in Egypt. We see what happened in Iran in 1979 with the revolution. These countries were democracies once upon a time long ago. And then these countries started making allowances. A little bit here, a little bit there. Oh, we'll get them this just to shut them up and keep them quiet. It did not quite work out as well as we had hoped, didn't it? We are seeing this happening in the West. I gave you an example from the UK under the thumb of that Dimmy David Cameron. If we start giving allowances, we're going to lose it. It will be gone forever. There's a new phenomena going on out there. This is a courtesy of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. They created a 10-point plan That was that's the Cairo Declaration. The OIC is sanctioned by the United Nations. See, they wrote this declaration to combat terrorism and to promote human rights. Few people realize, though, this was written under Sharia perceptions. Not secular Western perceptions, Sharia perceptions. Their idea of a terrorist is an infidel who would harm a Muslim. So they want to combat terrorism. They have sprung a new one on us. We have all heard of racism. Yes, we have. We're mostly familiar with the biological racism, though, however. Racism against people because of the color of their skin. That is unacceptable. We know that. But now the IOC, they have incorporated cultural racism, in which it is would be a crime to insult or denigrate or criticize one's culture. And what is Islam? It's a culture all upon itself, isn't it? These are global movements, and they are winning. They're encroaching on us. They're encroaching on our constitutions. The UN is sanctifying this. This is something that we have to stop. Now, Mike should be here momentarily. While I'm waiting for him, I'm going to play one of his songs. It's nearly the bottom of the hour anyway, and we're due for a little bit of a break. This is, wow, this will take you back a bit. If you're my age, it will. This is The Living Thing by Electric Light Orchestra. We'll see you back here in a few minutes.
Thank you.
And welcome back, everybody. And it is my honor to introduce you to the host of the program of Restore Australia, and that is Mr. Mike Holt. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Sorry I'm late, everybody.
Doing very well. I'm going to mute myself and let you take it away.
Okay. Well, it's a beautiful day here up in the Sunshine Coast north of Brisbane, about 100 kilometres north. We had some storms last night and yesterday, but today the sun is out and I'm shining. Unfortunately, the rest of the world is not doing so well. Since 9/11, we've had over 20,500 terrorist attacks, the religion of peace for you. I don't call it the religion of peace. I call it the religion of pieces. But, you know, the sad thing is most of those attacks are Muslims killing Muslims. How crazy is that? But when you consider that the Quran tells people, believers, that they have to go out and kill those who do not believe, well, you got to wonder why so many people believe in this madness. And it is madness. I call it a virus. I think you can call it whatever you like. Now, I give out a little pamphlet that's produced by the Concerned Citizens. I don't know who they are, but they live in, they come from Waii in New South Wales, Australia. And the booklet is called Islam, Be Informed, It Is In Your Best Interests. Now, they tell a very interesting story. And apparently this is a very true story. Last month, I attended my annual training session that's required for maintaining my state prison security clearance. During the training session, there was a presentation by three speakers representing the Roman Catholic, Protestant and Muslim faiths, who each explained their belief systems. I was particularly interested in what the Islamic Imam had to say. The Imam gave a great presentation of the basics of Islam, complete with a video. After the presentations, time was provided for questions and answers. When it was my turn, I directed my questions to the Imam and asked, "Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that most imams and clerics of Islam have declared a holy jihad against the infidels of the word, and that by killing an infidel, which is a command to all Muslims, they are assured of a place in heaven. If that's the case, can you give me the definition of an infidel?" Now, the funny thing is, there was no disagreement with my statement, and without hesitation, he replied, "Non-believers." I responded, "So let's make this clear. You said that all followers of Allah have been commanded to kill everyone who is not of your faith so they can go to heaven. Is that correct?" Well, the expression on his face changed from one of authority and command to that of a little boy who had just gotten caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He sheepishly replied, "Yes." I then stated, "Well, sir, I have a real problem trying to imagine Pope John Paul commanding all Catholics to kill those of your faith, or Dr. Stanley ordering Protestants to do the same in order to go to heaven." The Imam was speechless, and I continued, "I also have problems with being your friend when you and your brother clerics are telling your followers to kill me. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather have your Allah, who tells you to kill me in order to go to heaven, or my Jesus, who tells me to love you because I'm going to heaven and he wants you to be with me?" To be with me. You could have heard a pin drop as the Imam hung his head in shame. Just one story of many. I think we've all heard the story now about the Muslim and the Christian family living next door to each other in Syria, and the Imam came along and told the Muslim family, "You have to go and kill the Christians." And the mother of the Muslim family was distraught. She had been friends with that family for many, many years, all their life. But the Imam was adamant. So what did they do? In the name of their wonderful religion of peace, they went out and they killed their Christian neighbors. And that is what is happening all around the world. Christians are being killed by Muslims. Hindus are being killed by Muslims. Buddhists are being killed by Muslims. They're being killed everywhere. and this, they claim, is the religion of peace. Now, I think I mentioned last week that we need to understand the meaning of words. Now, Islam has declared jihad on us, not once, but many, many times. Various imams have said it many times, and we hear of examples of them declaring jihad on us all the time. So the question we must all ask ourselves is why? Why do these Muslims keep declaring jihad against us? And what is jihad anyway? So is there a difference between war and jihad? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. The answer is yes. War for us is any conflict involving weapons and killing between opposing groups or nations. But when Muslims talk about jihad, they're actually saying much more than that, much more than we understand. So maybe we should understand what jihad is not. It's not killing innocent people. It's not flying a plane into a building packed with civilians. After all, suicide is haram in Islam, unless, of course, it helps to further the spread of Islam. You've got to love their logic. Jihad is not fighting out of anger and hatred. Muslims believe they are doing you a favor by fighting you to bring Islam into your heart. Jihad is not killing others just because they don't agree with you. And jihad is not killing others just because they are not Islam. So what does jihad really mean? Well, it takes many forms. It can be of the heart or soul. It can be by the tongue. So defending Islam and spreading Islam by scholarly lectures, speeches and debates. It can be jihad by the pen, spreading Islamic information. Jihad by the hand, and this is the jihad of action rather than words. At certain areas it overlaps with zakat, which is charity, and the hajj, which is the pilgrimage. All Muslims are obliged to donate a portion of their income to zakat, and that's important because that directly relates to halal food. And a portion of this money is always used to promote Islam and jihad. Now, some of its examples include giving charity to the poor and needy, performing hajj or umrah, helping those who need help, saving people's lives, etc. But it also means giving portions of money that you make from business, such as certifying our food halal. And finally, there is jihad by the sword. Now, contrary to jihad of the heart or soul, this form of jihad is referred to as the lesser jihad. Sometimes it's necessary to undertake jihad by the sword, and this would include usage of arsenals and engaging in combat. It could simply be a bunch of freedom fighters or an organized campaign by an army. Jihad by the sword is the use of arms to engage in combat. It does not mean the misuse of arms to create violence. In other words, every time they go out and kill somebody, it is because they jihad. They have been told by their Quran and by that lovely pedophile leader of theirs, Muhammad, to go out and kill those who do not believe the same madness they did. I'm going to take a breath. Perhaps we can have another song. And when I get back, I'll be talking about a few other things that we really need to understand. Bill, would you like to play something for us?
The great pianist Pete Johnson and Albert Ammons would dress in identical clothing and play boogie-woogie duets. Unfortunately, these giants of the piano have passed away, and this extraordinary spectacle has not been seen for many, many years. The precise fingering and split-second timing required to make this one of the most demanding and dangerous pieces of music to perform. And only a handful of people left on Earth possess both the skill and the courage to attempt this almost extinct art form. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sunday night's own Boogie Woogie Twins. Gentlemen.
That really got me blood going. All right. Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about racism and what it all means to us. Now, we all always get accused of being racist whenever we criticize Islam. But I've lived overseas with amongst Muslims. In fact, I went to high school in Penang in Malaysia, which is a Muslim country. I lived in Thailand, where they have an Islamic jihad going on down south, where they're killing people almost every day. And I've traveled through Indonesia and in the Philippines, where they have Muslim uprisings, where Muslims are killing Christians in Indonesia. The Moro uprising in southern Philippines has been going on for decades, and they're still killing people there. Everywhere you look, Muslims are killing us. And they always say, as soon as we start talking about that, that we are the racists. But they're trying to wipe out whole races themselves. So what is racism? Now, it's generally defined as actions, practices, or beliefs that consider the human species to be divided into races with shared traits, abilities, or qualities, such as personality, intellect, morality, or other cultural behavioral characteristics, and especially the belief that races can be ranked as inherently superior or inferior to others, or that members of different races should be treated differently. Now, does that sound like we in the West who try and embrace all nations and all races? Or does it sound like Islam, which says it is the supreme religion, they are the supreme people, and anyone who is not Muslim is inferior? Now, of course, the exact definition of racism is controversial, both because there is little scholarly agreement about the meaning of the concept race, and because there is also little agreement about what does and doesn't constitute discrimination. Critics argue that the term is applied differently, with a focus on such prejudices by whites and defining mere observations of racial differences as racism. Now, why is it always the whites who are the racists? Actually, we are less racist than almost any other nation that I've been in. In Thailand, Thais are Buddhist, and yet they are some of the most racist people I've ever come across. If you're not Thai, you're not as good as they are. Same thing in Indonesia, same thing in Malaysia. And the Malays have a thing called the Bumi Putra, which means that if you are Chinese or Indian and you go into business, you must employ some Malay people. And that's the Bumi Putra doctrine. And that, to me, is racism, because these people are being employed based on their race and their religion rather than on their ability. So, you know, of course, in Australia, we've had a racist past. We even had the white Australia policy, which, quite frankly, I thought was a very good idea. But it applied for very good reasons. Now, if a race, in this case, a white race of mainly British settlers who came to make a new nation is to survive, then it needs a national identity. And the white Australia policy was designed to keep the race pure and unsullied by the many Chinese flocking to the new nation to mine for gold and eventually to settle here. Now, that wasn't a good policy, but it was put into place for the best reasons that made sense at the time. Now, we've evolved over many, many centuries, predating even the Roman invasion of the British Isles. And as a result, the British race has absorbed many influences since the ancient Picts and Celts were the dominant races in England. And along the way, they developed a strong and cohesive national identity that created the greatest empire the world has ever seen. The first settlers to come to Australia were white Englishmen, so it was natural that they would want to preserve that identity, and we did for many, many years. But in Australia, we've opened the doors to many new immigrants who have, and we have absorbed them into our nation and our society. And in the process, we have created what amounts to a new race, the Australian race. And we're all colours, we're all races, we're all mixed together. We are multiracial. Unfortunately, the leftists, the socialists and the communists have tried to make this sound like a bad thing, and they brought in what they call multiculturalism. Now, to me, multiculturalism means a separation of cultures. Australia is not about that. And I believe most nations in the West are not about that. We are about embracing all people and making them our own. Now, even the Vietnamese who flocked here in their flimsy boats came here intending to become Australians, and they've been very successful at that. Yeah, I know we were a little hesitant to accept them at first, but they soon showed that they could be a real asset to our nation, loyal, hardworking, and ready to integrate. What more could a nation ask for? Unfortunately, the latest arrivals coming here are totally different. They're from a different culture, a different religion, and one that is based on completely different backgrounds. They do not share the same moral and social basis as our culture. Islam teaches its adherents that they are superior to all others. That is racism. The Quran constantly refers to non-believers as infidels or kuffars or kafirs, and tells Muslims that we are to be either converted or killed. There is nothing in between. And Islam has a long history of antagonism and war with Christianity. The two cultures have never coexisted peacefully, because Islam, there is only one way to peace: convert to Islam or die. Or you can stay alive by paying the dhimma tax and becoming a second-class citizen under Islam. But you are not a human being anymore. There's no other possibility. What sort of religion is that? It's a racist religion. And the Muslims hate it when you actually turn it around on them and point this out. But the truth is, they are the racists. So what can we do about it? Well, we have to be aware of the words that they use, and we have to make sure that every time they point this racist slur at us, we make sure that they understand they are the ones that are racists. So I reckon we need to have just a little bit more music, and when we get back, we'll go into this a little bit more. What do you say, Kel?
What are you in the mood for, Mike? I've got all sorts of things here.
I'll leave it up to you.
I have a really good song here. This ties in perfectly to the topics that we have been discussing today. when I opened the show, I was just explaining to everybody about the evils of Islam and the four stages of Islam, and how that if we do not combat it right now, we are going to find ourselves in a whole boatload of trouble down the road, and that we have to do something right now. So I just found the perfect song, Mike.
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Here we go.
Appeasement. Appeasement. Dressed up as political compromise. It's immediate. The benefits seem immediate and popular. And tangible. Peace. At what price? But is it not an illusion? Are we not kidding ourselves? I'm just staving off the day of reckoning. Can evil ever be compromised? Ever be compromised? Evil will live on. 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 Evil will live on.
Sacrifice our principles in the name of diplomacy, tolerance, intolerance. Shake hands with those who hate us. Can they ever be satisfied?
Could a foreign flag yet fly over Paris, London, Rome, and Washington?
They want to take over undocumented labor, disengaging, demanded, human culture requiring, political correctness.
Last long, or will it waste, exhaust, and murder itself? Will democracies commit suicide?
Able to tendencies are up to it and strong. Don't submit, surrender, don't succumb, 'cause evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on.
Evil that lived has laughed at them. The good is oft interred with their bones.
Yeah, indeed. If we don't keep up our guard and not be aware of what is going on, we will definitely have problems, and evil will live on. We have to confront evil, and we have to stop it in its tracks. Every time somebody accuses us of being a racist, we have to stop them and ask them why. Why do you think we are racist? So the other day, well, last month when I was campaigning for election, the papers got all upset about the stickers that I print. Beware, halal certificate, halal food supports terrorism. Queensland Government Minister Glenn Elms, Minister for Multiculturalism and Aboriginal Affairs, accused me of being racist. Now, because I was running for election, I didn't really have time to get back to him and hold him up to this. But I just sent him a letter a couple of days ago, and I started off by saying, Mr. Elms, you recently accused me of being a racist. I have since written emails to you asking you to either justify your attack on me or apologize for your blatant ignorance and bad manners. Now, the man hasn't apologized. He hasn't got back to me at all. He hasn't acknowledged that he has been so rude and nasty to me. So I'm waiting for him to respond to my letter. It'll be very interesting, and I'll let you know what happens when I do hear from him. But in my letter to him, I explained why I'm not a racist and why Islam is causing the problems here. And he needs to understand what this is all about. So I sent him that booklet, Islam, Be Informed, It's in Your Best Interest. I also sent him some links to articles on my website at restoreaustralia.org.au. And hopefully this man might understand one day why the racist for calling me one. Now, there was a gentleman on there, Wild Bill, Kel, that you had on the other day that I was listening to with a great deal of interest. But this gentleman kept on talking about how God will help America. And I keep on hearing Americans talking about God all the time. I wonder if it just has dawned on them that by talking about God, just as the Muslims do, they are no better than the Muslims. God is the cause of all these problems. Religion is the cause of all these problems. And until we stop believing in these gods made by man and start understanding that there is a greater spiritual power, not a man-made God, but a spirit in the universe. That is what guides mankind. We don't need a religion to teach us moral behavior. Mind you, a lot of our morals are based on Christianity. There are a lot of good things in Christianity. I'm not saying that. But this is the 21st century, and we have science. We know what is going on in the world. We know how the universe was made. You only have to pick up a telescope and look out into the universe and realize how insignificant we are. We are just a minor speck on the edge of a minor universe. There are millions of universes out there. So please, don't rely on God. It's time for us to rely on ourselves. We have to be responsible for our own actions. And we have to stop letting religion guide our actions. It's up to us, the people. I've never seen God come down and say, hey, you guys, you've got to stop fighting, have I? No. In fact, religion has been responsible for most of the wars throughout history. It's time for us to stand up and say, I am a man or a woman, and I take responsibility for my own actions. I don't care what you believe in, it's up to you. But don't try and solve the problems of the world by fighting one religion with another. It hasn't worked in the past, and it won't work now. So please, people, take responsibility for yourselves, and let's have some peace a bit longer. But to be honest with you at the moment, I was hoping to have some guests on here, but things just get out of hand, and family things crop up, and time runs out. And I have to go and get my kids up for school. So I'm going to have to stop in a moment. But I want to thank everybody for listening in. And if you're listening to the recording afterwards of this, please keep listening. And next week, I'll be here again on Weekend Morning. This time, I hope to be on time. And I will see you again. Thank you all for listening. Bye now.
The janitor's drive a Cadillac, big and red. He just drives his big red car back and forth to work each day, cleaning sinks and scrubbing floors. He knows what it's all for. The people think he's just rich. Yeah.
They just don't seem to understand it's a bitch, yeah.
Janitor driving his Cadillac, shiny and new. Back and forth to school each day, just knows what he's gotta do. He ain't there to do no study time, to learn how to read or write. Tote that punch, flip that thing.
Well, he just got to make those car payments.
Show.